Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, dweebs. It's Nina from Already Gone. Before we get into this week's episode, which I am lucky enough to guest host on, you should know that there is some talk of sexual assault, and I know not everyone is comfortable with that topic, so just wanted to give you a heads up so you can make the decision if you want to listen.
Welcome to History, dweebs. Now, you're already giggling. Now, stop it. Be professional, devil.
Was it me?
Welcome to History, dweebs. Oh, well, that's okay then. Today is another in honor of Women's Month. Today we're doing another Colonel's Threesome with two women and just me. And our guest today is the lovely Nina Instead, hailing from Tittawabi, Michigan. Isn't that where you're from?
That would be the Tittabawassee tributary. Yes.
Okay, but I know you was close to there somewhere, right?
Oh, yeah. Very close.
And as well, you really need no introduction, but I will just say, how are you today? And tell us about your shows, Nina.
I am doing surprisingly well, all things considered. And I've actually been very busy over at Already Gone. I'm trying to put out a couple of extra episodes because I know people are at home and they're worried and they need a little entertainment and distraction.
Well, we can distract with the best of them.
Oh, yes.
I believe.
Of course.
No, distracted is different than distract people. You are distracted, yeah. Charles.
Well, before I go any further, we are a true crime comedy podcast.
It's true.
And we do use sometimes strong language. Now, I don't, because my church has gone to a virtual churching now. It's like Joel Osteen. I can log on to the computer and go to the service. Or just log on to the computer and walk away and say I was there. And you can tithe online. It's amazing.
Yes, it is.
But anyway, I digress.
There will be bad language.
What was I, devil?
I don't know. We use
the
language. We use strong language.
If that language is disturbing to you, we have a couple suggestions in this crisis. One, Nina, could you tell them what they could do?
They could fuck off.
There we go. Don't let the door hit you in your ass.
Right. Since okay, it's Sunday.
You've been warned.
Well, Chuck, it is Sunday, Colonel. Mm-hmm. So don't let the door hit you where the Lord split you.
Exactly.
That's exactly right. But yeah, I was Well, I'm just not going to digress. I'm going to stay on point. I'm going to be professional because we have the lovely Nina, who's been at DweebCon a couple times, and I would just say we're
she's been every time
because I don't want to keep those rumors going. I'll just say me and Nina are personal acquaintances.
We're very close.
Would you? Yeah, describe it as a personal acquaintance.
Yes.
So the other woman, because this is Woman Empowerment Month or whatever
lady
it is.
Lady ass face, the other lady.
Something. And we wanted you, you know, when you, well, we wanted to do something special. When you're doing your housework, you're vacuuming, you're ironing, you're cleaning, whatnot.
What?
We wanted to have special episodes just for you, just to make you feel better. You know, whipping up a cake because your husband going out there.
You know what?
This
is my fault.
Scary world.
This is my fault because I thought he could do an introduction without, you know, just doing what he's doing right now. This is my fault. It's a rookie mistake, and I apologize.
So let me introduce our other panelist,
lady,
who really needs no introduction because if she's anywhere in your vicinity, the hair on the back of your neck stands up, and you don't need to say Brandy or the devil's here because you're already, things in your nether parts are already getting shriveled and tight and your hair's
the word you're looking for is tingly.
So, how are you, devil, if at all?
You know, Chuck, we're okay. We're all right. We're riding this thing out. You know, we were just talking about you and I are, we're lucky in some ways because we're considered essential employees by, I don't know, but so we go to work every day, and get out of the house and go down and get to, you know, we hang out, you know, me and you and Tim, because there's not very much going on right now. And, you know, we're kind of quarantined in our little building. And so we're lucky. Noah's, you know, still alive and kicking. And I think that's the best we can hope for at this point is that I haven't killed him yet. So, you know, we're doing good.
Are very fortunate. I will say this is off the subject number, but.
Oh, really?
I got a report. Yeah, I got a report Friday. And you go back to two Wednesdays ago, Devil. And people know that we work for the state in workforce development. And 2 weeks ago, on Wednesday, there were 800 people in Ohio that filed for unemployment.
Yeah.
And last Wednesday, there were 12,500.
Wow.
Just in that day that filed for unemployment. So yes, we are very fortunate that we are going to work, that we haven't been ill.
Yeah.
So far the impact has been minimal to us. But for others it's not been. So
we already wear gloves when we go in Chuck's office cuz God knows what's in there.
No,
so
I
mean, yeah, so it's not much of a change for us.
I wear gloves when I go out my office. Mm-hmm.
Not those kind of gloves, honey.
Oh yeah, we have a medical place right below us. So
we do, so
you can get all the free latex gloves you want.
I don't think that's it, but we have a nursing school in our basement. So you know, worst comes to worst, we still have beds we can sleep in.
Oh,
we could stay there. We could.
Don't,
we got
don't.
Vending machines and
don't give them ideas.
Yeah, no, we're not staying there.
That's true.
No.
And you keep your office pretty well stocked.
Hell yeah, I do. I've been working. You know, it's, yeah, I do. I do. I keep my office well stocked. I got food in there for snacks and for my staff. And yeah, so little fridge. We got refrigerators. We got all kinds of shit. There's a toaster oven. Well, I mean, we're in good shape.
We are trying to do our best to help people that need help. Whatever little thing we can do.
The Lord's work.
You're doing the Lord's work.
Yes.
Well, we are doing the Lord, and I try to do the Lord's work every day. devil has to get a paycheck to do it.
You're damn right, I do.
She just does it grudgingly. Then, but
yep.
But what we'd like to delve into, who we're talking about today. Would you like to tell us about that, Devil?
Well, yeah. So today, we are talking about Lori Dan, and she is kind of fucked up. You know, yeah, we've talked about some weird, disturbed women on the podcast before. Ida Wood, Sada Abi. She was trouble, but Lori Dan is kind of in a league of her own. So are we ready to roll here? We got everybody's comfy and got their coffee and everything. We're ready to go?
Let's go.
All right. So Lori Dan was born Lori Wasserman, the daughter of Norman and Edith Wasserman. She grew up in the neighboring communities of Highland Park and Glencoe, Illinois. If you're not from, you know, the S is silent. It's like I'm taking Tim's part today. If you're not familiar with Glencoe, it's located north of Chicago, right on Lake Michigan. It's a prestigious suburb.
I've been there.
Of course you have. It's a prestigious suburb, and it's the wealthiest town in Illinois. Glencoe was the setting of the 1983 Tom Cruise film Risky Business, and then several scenes from Ferris Bueller's Day Off. Yay, Ferris.
You know, it's funny you mentioned Risky
it's
Business.
It's not, though.
Right this moment, what I've got is a... I'm sitting here in a long sleeve blue button down shirt.
Stop.
And tidy whities. So.
Yeah.
It's just like Risky Business. I'm going to go slide across my floor here in a few minutes.
All right.
Me and Bo like to do that. We got hardwood floors here. We run down the hallway and slide.
All right. So her childhood was uneventful, and Lori was described as shy and quiet. She was an average looking child, but her parents were wealthy and sent her to a plastic surgeon. Yay. You know, how do you even broach that with, you know, honey, you're beautiful, but we're going to rearrange your face just a smidge. That's ridiculous.
Well, was she really an average-looking child?
But that's ridiculous.
Was she really average?
Why would you do
I mean,
that?
Were the other children screaming and just, when she went to the playground? What? Because, you know, Taylor pointed this out to me. In Chicago, they have signs up, "You are beautiful." And he has a theory that that only makes the ugly people realize that they're really ugly.
Uh-oh. Wow. That's
no, I mean, there's no such thing as everybody's beautiful. Everybody's beautiful in their own way, but if you keep saying everybody's beautiful, then nobody's beautiful.
That's an amazing story that did nothing to add to this podcast.
Well, it's really a philosophical question, sure. Devil, that you have to struggle
so
with.
So the surgery.
If everybody's virtuous. Nobody's virtuous.
Okay. So the surgery, Nina, do you know what age she was when she had this surgery?
So she, when we get a little further in the script, you'll see that she changed schools between her sophomore and junior year. And I'm willing to bet that's when the surgery happened.
Yeah, because, I mean, at that point, I mean, you're still growing into yourself. You're still, you know, because that's ridiculous. So,
yeah, but Lori had a lot of jaw. If you look at pictures of her, there's a lot of jaw there.
Now, that could be a plus for her.
She's a handsome woman.
I'm just saying.
All right. So,
a lot of jaw is not always a bad thing.
So the surgery transformed her from average to attractive. And their daughter...
I worked for Jay Leno.
Well, and their daughter might not have been the smartest or the most outgoing, but now she was nice looking. She was petite, 5'3", with straight teeth, long brown hair, and dark eyes. So she's dumb but pretty. That's nice.
Well, really, if you...
I've got family
don't,
like
don't,
that.
Don't, okay. Don't do it, Colonel. Don't do it.
As Bruce said in Thunder Road, and that's all right with me.
Yeah, I've got family like that. Lori did just okay in school. For high school, she attended the Highland Park High School for her freshman and sophomore years. And then in the summer, between her sophomore and junior year, her parents purchased a luxurious 5-bedroom home in Glencoe. So she transferred to a new high school. Despite mediocre grades, upon graduation from New Tier High School in Winnetka in 1975, she was able to go off to college because they'll take anyone. Dan attended Drake University in Iowa. She would transfer to Arizona State University, and while in Arizona, Lori embarked on her first serious romantic relationship of her life. She began dating a fellow student, an unnamed, which kind of sucks for him that his parents didn't love him that much, undergrad, in the pre-med program. Friends and family thought the relationship was serious, and perhaps this guy was the one. Lucky for him, though, he dodged a bullet, literally. Lori's behavior was becoming increasingly bizarre and unsettling. What the fuck? She was suspicious and controlling of him, and he ended the relationship, but Lori did not handle it well. The breakup happened around the start of her senior year, and rather than soldiering on to earn those last credits needed for her degree, she packed her things and returned home to Glencoe, Illinois, where her parents were waiting for her. In 1980, Lori enrolled in Northwestern University because she planned to complete her studies there. So,
well, she couldn't have been a dumb girl because she got into Northwestern.
You know what? That could have been the college admission. That could have been the original college admission scandal. You know, yeah, somebody paid.
Well, that's true, too. Her parents. Yeah,
they had money. She could have gone wherever.
That's how I got Tanner into Loyola.
With all your money? With all of Mrs. Yeah. Colonel's money?
Yeah, well, we gave a $75 donation to the alumni.
Nice. That's all it took, huh?
That's very generous.
So sweet.
All right, Brandy, carry on.
All right. Lori was...
Hold on, we skipped something here.
Well, that's Nina's story, and she can tell it if she wants or not. We don't pry.
Well,
Charles.
Okay, so when I was 19, so college age, I started dating a doctor that I worked with at the hospital. And my mom was so freaking happy about it. Like, she had everything planned out because I was dating this doctor. I think he and I might have gone on 3, maybe 4 dates. And he was very nice. He was tall and nice looking. But he wasn't, like, we weren't compatible, like, at all. So I ended the relationship, and I honestly think that my family was more upset about that than I was. Because they, like, had this whole, like, oh, he's a doctor. And he was actually, ironically, from Arizona.
Oh, nice.
Just like Lori's doctor. No
kidding. Well.
So do you ever do this hateful thing that women do sometimes? Throw up to your current spouse? You know, I could have married a doctor.
No.
Okay. That's very good, because that's hurtful.
I like my husband. I wouldn't do that.
Good Lord, Chuck.
You have an excellent husband.
I do. I'm very lucky.
You sometimes tell me what he's whipping up for dinner, and I'm like, oh, my Lord, sweet Jesus.
Well, and you know, I've been posting quarantinis, my evening cocktails, and that's
very
all
nice.
Him. Mm-hmm. He plans cocktails for each night, so we have a nice drink.
You know, at some point you're going to have to quit posting those because your nails are going to get raggedy as fuck.
Shh, that's not going to happen.
Ugh.
Well,
raggedy.
We're
going to
know what color your hair is here soon.
I know. That's the scary thing.
I got to pluck my own eyebrows. I have an emergency box of Lady Clairol.
Oh, I'll be fine. Yeah. Well, I got to pluck my own eyebrows like an animal now, and I'm not very good at it.
Well, Brandy,
I'll overpluck.
Not to pluck them, you could just start inventing things and you'll be fine.
Evidently, it's a bad scene.
Well, Nina, how often do you get your hair cut?
Probably 3 times a year.
Just 3 times a year that you actually go
to get it cut.
The lady and get your hair cut?
Yeah.
Okay. How about you, Devil?
Oh, gosh. Just kind of whenever I get around to it or I think about it. It's not very often.
Every 3 weeks here.
Well.
Every 3 weeks.
Mrs. Colonel gets her hair cut every 3 weeks?
Every 3 weeks.
Wow.
So?
Wait. Cut or colored?
I'm not
he
really
doesn't
sure
know.
What goes on there.
Yeah, it's probably just colored.
She might even have a boyfriend. I don't know. She's just saying she's going to get her hair
cut. It's probably colored.
I don't know what.
It's probably colored. That's what you need to, because your hair's not going to grow that much in 3 weeks, but it, mm-mm. You know, you will start showing some roots.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Let's see. So Lori was working toward becoming a high school teacher because she was, you know, obviously emotionally stable enough to do that. But she was not in a good place emotionally, and she would drop out of Northwestern. She never did complete the requirements to earn her degree. In 1981, oh, Chuck, you remember 1981?
I was a junior in high school. I was wearing
I was in first grade.
T-shirts, blue jeans. I never did have really a mullet because my hair was just naturally kind of.
No, you had a mullet for sure. I've seen pictures. You had a mullet.
Well, that's just the way my hair grew.
Uh-huh.
I was smoking Marlboros and had a 74 Red Nova. I really think I peaked about that time.
I would agree. I was in first grade, so I very well peaked as well. It's all been downhill from there.
Yeah.
Let's see. Things weren't looking good for Miss Lori Wasserman. Her college boyfriend was in med school, pursuing his dreams, and she was living at home with her parents, unable to complete her undergrad work. So
he still didn't have a name.
He still didn't have a name, love his heart. But soon enough, it wouldn't matter because after his no name would be MD. So it doesn't matter at that point.
Well, that's true. One time I went through the desert.
On a double. Horse with no name?
On a horse with no name.
That's amazing.
What, you know what bothers me about that song?
I can't imagine.
At some point, come up with a goddamn name for the horse.
Well.
You know, I mean, you're going through the desert. It's 2-3 days in the sun. I mean, what? It's just rude to not even give the horse a name.
I don't know.
You're not even talking to the horse?
Next time we run into Kansas, we'll ask them.
No, that was America.
That was actually
America. Oh, it was America. Sorry.
God, learn your classic rock. Devil.
Sorry. Well, you know, Kansas,
but I just
America.
Thought at some point,
they're kind of the same.
In that thing, name the goddamn horse. Give him a name. It's just rude.
Well, maybe his name was no name.
You know, if they ever start having concerts again, we can go protest.
We should, definitely. Yeah. On horses.
I think we should.
On horses.
Yes.
All right, so Lori was undecided about her future. I don't know if it was as much undecided as undecided for her. Lori took a summer job as a waitress at the Green Acres Country Club in Northbrook, Illinois. It was there that she met Russell Dan, the son of a predominant Highland Park family. Dan was drawn to Lori because he loves the crazy, and he would propose to her in Boca Raton, Florida, while they were vacationing at her parents' second home. Lori Wasserman and Russell Dan were married in September of 1982. The wedding was small. While Russell Dan had a large family and many friends, Lori was an only child and had few friends to call on for her big day. Lori's father gifted the newlyweds $15,000. Fuck. Which is about $40,000 in today's dollars.
See, have you ever seen the chart, the hot crazy matrix?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. That's she's who this chart was made for, it sounds like. Because you got to remember, she's had the plastic surgery, and I can't imagine that they just stopped at the neck. If you're going to do plastic surgery, go full Monty here.
I have always wondered. I have always wondered when you see a woman that you know is just off the beam, and I mean not just a little, I mean like full on, can't even see sane in the rearview mirror. What in your mind makes you say, you know what? She's the one for me. She may kill me in my sleep, but hey.
It's not so much she's the one for me. It's more, I'm a risk it.
Are
you? Yeah, I'm a risk it. I know she's crazy, but you know what? I mean, look at her. I'm a risk it. And it never turns out well.
No.
Never turns out well.
I mean, they
and you know that going in.
I don't get it. So Lori's mental health was somewhat stable at this point, but after the wedding, things began to go a bit downhill. While Dan purchased a large, expensive home for them, Lori showed no interest in decorating it. She was incapable of completing basic household tasks like laundry or preparing meals. But she grew up rich, so she may not have had that skill set. I'm just saying.
Yeah, that's true.
After a long day at work, Russ would come home to find his wife on the sofa staring at the television. Wet laundry hidden in random drawers, and instead of his dinner in the microwave, he would find Lori's cosmetic stash there. Dave sees that when he comes
home,
too.
Okay, now, I'm just trying to figure this out here. Because you get, you got wet laundry, right?
Yep.
Uh-huh.
You pull it out of the washing machine.
Yeah.
Now, what is right next to the washing machine?
Well, they may not have had one. You got to remember, this is like in the 80s. They may not have had one. She may have had to line dry them, which is a lot of work. You take that wet laundry out and hang
it
up.
The fuck, it was the 80s. We ain't talking about taking them down to the rock and creek and
I know, and I assume they were well-to-do, but still, yep. What if she had to take it outside and hang it on a line? It's a lot of work.
No, she didn't have to do that. I can guarantee it. But
her
it was
soaps
more
were
work
on.
To put them in the drawer than it was to put them in the dryer.
Days of
the
Our Lives right was on.
Right. And you couldn't.
Guiding
there was
light.
No, like, TiVo back then. You couldn't DVR
yes.
shit. She could have missed
no,
her story.
You had to be there. You had to be there. General
no,
Hospital.
She could have VCR'd it.
No.
She could have recorded her shows.
First of all, nobody could really figure out how to do those. I had to have my brother, you know, figure out the VCR. My parents had to have my brother figure out the VCR. But here's the thing. If her stories are on, then, you know, maybe that's why she just shoved the wet clothes in the drawer. And, you know, you always have to have your cosmetics stashed someplace where they're accessible. The microwave was probably where she was close to. I'm just saying. She was also, and this I don't understand, with her cosmetics in the microwave, she was also showing signs of OCD, obsessive compulsive disorder. So
I want to talk about this because you'll hear people say, "Oh, I'm OCD about that. It has to be this way." And OCD is not a personality trait or quirk. Actual obsessive compulsive disorder is debilitating. It can interfere with a person's ability to live their life each day. And some of the symptoms of OCD, intrusive thoughts that can't be ignored. And in some people who have OCD, these thoughts lead to unwanted routines and behaviors that are rigid. Like if they don't wash their hands or if they don't do things a certain way, it's upsetting and distressing to them.
Yeah, like flipping on and off the light switch and all that kind of stuff.
Right, or making sure the door is locked repeatedly.
Yeah, like five times, yeah.
That's part of the outward behaviors, but the worst part of that, and I will say this because I have had that diagnosis, is the intrusive thoughts.
Yeah.
And what they do, it's kind of like a cassette that plays over and over and over and over and over and over in your head. And you can't break that thought. And it's for me, it's not debilitating because I've learned over the years how to deal with it through, you know,
meditation,
professional help.
Meditation and
but it can
essential
be
oils.
It really can. It can almost freeze you because you get focused on one thing and you can't focus on anything else. It's like you're living inside your head and nowhere else. So, yeah, if anybody's ever suffered from that, it's no fun. I can tell you that much.
No, it's serious.
Yeah.
Lori?
Yes, it's a but Prozac is pretty effective for that, so.
Jeez.
I just keep eating pills.
There you
go.
Well,
they did not have Prozac until the early 90s. So when Lori started showing these symptoms, there really wasn't a medication like that. Lori's husband noticed that she would tap her foot when the car stopped for a traffic light. She also washed her hands repetitively, and after a time, she would not leave the house, not even with her husband. He loved her, but he couldn't go on this way. So in October of 1985, Russ moved out of their home and got an apartment nearby. Almost immediately, Russell and his family began receiving repetitive hang-up phone calls. In April of 1986, Lori Dan went to the police to report that Russell had broke into her parents' home where she now lived and vandalized it. Police took a report, but nothing came of it. A few days after she filed the report, Lori Dan purchased a .357 Magnum.
Smart move.
Yeah.
Smart
when
move.
When police learned of the purchase, they strongly suggested that she not have access to the weapon. But her father refused to confiscate the gun and said he would make sure it was secure in a safe. And make a note of this, because this is going to come back up later.
I think we've established that her parents don't make good decisions either.
Oh,
plastic surgery in high school. Yeah.
In September of 1986, someone broke into the apartment of Russell Dan and stabbed him once in the chest with an ice pick. Dan survived the attack, right? Like horror movie shit.
Somebody Basic Instincted his ass.
Yes.
Jeez Louise.
Before Basic Instinct.
Right.
He survived, but barely. The ice pick missed his heart by inches. Police investigated the attempted murder, and Dan told them about his mentally unbalanced wife and how he moved into the apartment as the divorce was processed. So after this...
So Dan did not see who stabbed him in the... He couldn't recall.
He was probably asleep.
He was asleep.
Yeah.
You would think that shit will wake you up, though.
Well, yeah, but that doesn't mean he saw her.
Right.
He was asleep.
Yeah, but it ain't. I'm just saying, you can't stand in the doorway and stab somebody in the chest with an ice pick.
Here's the thing.
I mean, that's an up close and personal thing.
No, here's the thing. So think about when you're asleep at night. Like, I sneak in your house and punch you in the face.
Couldn't happen.
Well, it
couldn't happen.
Hypothetically,
we're just saying. Okay, you're gonna need to settle the fuck down.
But I'm one of those people. I sleep on high alert.
Of course you do.
I sleep on high alert all the time. That's why I hear about people sleeping. I don't know what, you know, I know, devil, you sleep naked. I won't ask you, Nina, because that's a personal question. Me, I got to go to bed dressed for battle in case a burglar comes in.
Okay, so let's...
Because you don't want to be wrestling. Nothing worse can happen.
So you sleep like in a flat
jumping out of
jacket.
Bed naked.
Yeah, yeah, he sleeps in full camo.
I sleep with sweatpants on, and I sleep with a t-shirt on, and if a burglar comes into my house, because I don't want my junk all flopping around if I got to wrestle with a burglar.
You don't want to dick slap anybody. You know? Here's the thing. There's a couple of things
exactly.
here.
Exactly.
First of all, you live on the west side, so you actually really should be sleeping on high alert. Second of all.
I do.
I know. Second of all, so let's just pretend that I come into your house while you're asleep, and I punch you in the face. Now, as it's been well established, I'm a little jukey, and I can move in and out very quickly like a ninja. It's been established. So I punch you in the face, and then I run out. Like, you wouldn't even, and you look, and, you know, Renee's sound asleep beside you. You wouldn't know. You wouldn't know who it was necessarily. You might have, you know, an idea that, you know, well, Brandy said she was going to come over and punch me in the face, but you wouldn't know it was me because you didn't see me because I'm jukey, and well, I go to sleep in camo, and you would never see me.
First of all, Bo and Rudy would have most
of
the meat shredded from your bones before you got there.
Listen to me, Dave. But, we're saying this is a hypothetical. I don't need to go through every motherfucking contingency. What if I trip over one of your stupid things in the floor? What if this happens? What I'm just saying. I don't want to go through all the hypotheticals.
I'm just saying. Getting stabbed in the goddamn chest with an ice pick would tend to wake you up quickly, and you'd open your eyes saying, who in the fuck just stabbed me with an ice pick?
And they're already gone.
When you hear the little pitter-patter of feet running out the door.
And you're already.
I just don't understand.
And she's already gone.
I think
thanks
he stabbed
for the plug,
himself
Brandy.
To set up his wife.
Yeah, hey, thanks. No problem. Yeah, she's gone by then. She stabs him and leaves. She didn't stay there hanging out on top of him, just repeatedly stabbing him. She
Correct.
Stabbed him
it
in the chest,
one.
And she motored out.
Yep.
You know, and maybe he's All a heavy right. sleeper. But I don't need every contingency. You're killing me.
Following this incident, a store clerk came forward to say she had sold an ice pick to Lori just days before the murder.
So there's
no
that.
Witnesses,
that seems
right.
suspicious.
With yeah. no witnesses placing Lori at the scene, police will issue polygraphs to both Russell and Lori. And as an aside, do either of you own an ice pick?
God, no. No, you yeah. don't.
I got an ice pick.
For what?
I got a pickaxe. I would have just stabbed him with the pickaxe.
Fuck's sake.
Because then he would have been stuck to the bed. But yeah, I do have an ice
pick. Has an ice pick. You have an awl.
No, I've got an ice pick, the kind that you break up cubes of ice.
No, I understand what an ice pick is for.
You know, I was at a yard sale one day.
Do you have one because you like the rough edges when you break the block?
This is very cool.
Ain't that the truth?
And I could, and I went home and I cleaned it up and polished it. And I liked having it.
What? Oh, my God.
I don't know. I got the Chinese throwing stars. I'm preparing for this apocalypse.
Well, it's here. Who's laughing now?
If somebody comes here, you're gonna be met. If you come here and try to steal my toilet paper, you're gonna be met with two, hounds from hell.
Yes.
And then if you get past me with an ice pick, then I got all other weapons of destruction that I can deal with you. Because we don't know that society's not just going to completely break down here.
Are you going to talk them?
You should all be
sweetie,
prepared
so
and have ice picks.
Are you going to talk them to death? Are you going to become friends? Because that's what I see more than you having an ice pick.
Well, have you noticed what's not going on during this whole thing?
What?
What?
What did not happen yesterday?
What?
On Saturday? There was no people knocking on the door trying to sell you pamphlets.
Sell me pamphlets?
Think about that.
Mm-hmm. Huh. No, I've never bought an ice pick.
This
Nina.
Is keeping even the Jehovah's Witnesses in the house.
I've never bought an
That's
ice pick.
That's how bad it is.
I have never bought an ice pick either. And I would think that a screwdriver would work just as well as an ice pick.
That's what
Although
I'm saying.
Although Phillips versus flat, that's sort of a dealer's choice type thing.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah. So, Chuck, do you want to talk about how Russell Dan failed his polygraph?
Yeah, it's kind of interesting here. In a bizarre twist, Russell Dan failed his polygraph. And apparently he was lying about being stabbed in the chest with an ice pick, I suppose. Even though the wound was gaping and bleeding, he made that up. I don't know. But Lori passed hers.
Because she is a psychopath.
Now, one of the doctors who examined Dan after the attack speculated that he could have stabbed himself. After all, he wasn't badly injured. And police decided not to charge Lori Dan in the incident.
Jesus.
Now, polygraphs, I don't know the ins and outs of polygraphs, and I've never been hooked up to one, so I can't tell you how really
I find that hard to
effective
believe
they are in deciphering. But back in the 80s, they used to polygraphs were gold. They believed everything.
Oh, yeah.
If your polygraph came back, and there's certain personality traits like sociopaths who tend to do pretty well on polygraphs.
Yeah.
And there's other people who are. The problem with polygraphs is, I'm preaching to the choir because you know far more about me than polygraphs, Nina.
Yeah.
Because you work with the police so much, is if you have a little bit of a high-strung personality, you don't do too well on polygraphs either. So.
Well, it was in the late 80s that they figured out that polygraphs should not be the gold standard of guilt or innocence. I think it was 88, 89 that they said, you know what? We're not going to accept passing or failing a polygraph to determine if somebody is guilty or innocent. And today you still use polygraphs, but if I can say, it's part of an investigative package. It's not just the polygraph.
Just part of the package.
Right.
It's part of the investigative what? I'm sorry?
Package.
Oh, for fuck's sake.
Package.
I watch them do polygraphs on Maury. It's amazing. Love it.
So,
come on.
Are you going to continue here, Kurt?
Go ahead. No, go ahead. Go ahead.
Okay. In 1986, about the same time someone broke into Russell Dan's apartment and stabbed him in the chest, Lori thought it was time to look up her college sweetheart, the unnamed
doctor. Before
doctor.
Facebook. I mean, it's a bad idea, but this was before Facebook. So she had to put a lot of effort into it.
When she finally connected with the nice pre-med student she dated while at Arizona State University, she learned he was married, and she began sending letters to him and his family. She told him that she was pregnant with his child, which was ridiculous because she hadn't seen him in 5 years.
It happens. She's late in pregnancy.
Sure. And Lori called the hospital where he worked to say that while she was in the hospital emergency room, the doctor, the unnamed doctor, sexually assaulted her.
Jesus.
So, yeah. So the doctor calls the police and gets a lawyer involved. And eventually Lori's parents are contacted and told that the harassment needs to stop. And it puts an end to her bizarre and distressing behavior.
In this instance. Yeah.
In this instance, for this little window.
Right.
But in addition to placing all these calls to her college boyfriend, she was also allegedly responsible for dozens, if not hundreds, of phone calls placed to the family of her former husband, Russell Dann. And at one point, they did arrest Lori for the harassment, but they dropped the charges because of lack of evidence. In 1987, Lori Dann told the police that Russell, her soon-to-be former husband, had, quote, raped her with a steak knife.
God, you know,
ow.
There should be, right, I share all of that sentiment, but that's pretty easy to prove or disprove.
Well,
I mean,
and she was given a physical exam, which showed that she had not been assaulted.
There
but
we
again,
go.
They give her a lie detector test, and guess what? She passed
it. She passed it.
Because she's a psycho.
Yeah. So police go to her parents, like, I'm sure the police were like, what the fuck, dude, help us out here.
Right.
And the parents say that Lori is under the care of a psychiatrist for obsessive compulsive disorder and a chemical imbalance. And my guess is that if today she was receiving treatment for her mental health issues, the diagnosis would probably be more complicated than OCD and a chemical imbalance.
Psycho
and I'm not
bitch.
Saying that with, yeah, I'm not saying that with any judgment.
I am judging.
Oh.
Psycho bitch.
In my vast experience in mental
bitches
health,
be crazy.
Yeah.
That's exactly what she has, the bitches be crazy disorder.
That was probably written on her police file somewhere.
Bitches be crazy. Yeah, it probably
was.
It's in
the DSM-4 now. You know, it's going to be in the next. Yeah. You just got to look real hard. They used to call borderline personality now it's just bitches be crazy.
Good God.
So, and it should be like that in honor of Women's Month. They should have their own special
Colonel.
Thing.
Okay.
Their own special diagnosis. The bitches be crazy diagnosis.
You should have stopped. So just stop.
In May of 87, after 4 years of marriage, the divorce is finalized, and Lori received a settlement of $125,000, which is almost $300,000 in 2020 money.
She made all right for a girl who kept her cosmetics in the microwave.
Right? Well,
that was a pretty good investment by her dad.
That's right.
Given that dowry of $40,000, now she comes back with $125,000.
Yep, tripled that money. So Lori left the marriage.
All she had to do was stab somebody in the chest for it.
Ugh. I'd stab somebody. Wait, never mind. Lori left the marriage. She moved back home with her parents.
I've done it for less.
But she kept her name, Lori Dann. Oh,
I'm sure she was excited. Russell was very excited about that.
I bet he was. So as a parting gift to her ex-husband, in May of 1987, she called the police to say that Russell Dann left an incendiary device in the home she shared with her parents. And the wording is interesting because an incendiary device is meant to start a fire.
Yeah.
He gone full Navy SEAL on her now.
Yeah. Yeah. Whatever. God. Ugh. All right.
So I don't normally sympathize with one side in the divorce or the other because it takes two people to make a marriage work, blah, blah, blah. But in this case, Russell Dann went through hell and then some during his marriage to and divorce from Lori. And in an odd twist, he did remarry. And his second wife's name? Lori.
Lori.
L-O-R-I.
Ah!
So when they got married, it was decided that she'd keep her maiden name.
It's probably smart. Yeah. Smart move.
Yeah.
So
Jesus.
It's 1987. Lori Dann is 30 years old. She's freshly divorced, and she needs something to do. She's bored. So she decides to try babysitting.
Jesus God.
Yeah. Oh, it gets better. She puts flyers up at the Glencoe Library and the corner grocery store and starts getting calls for work. So she starts working at different homes, and there are several bizarre incidents. These include leather sofas being sliced open, rugs being cut apart, and garage door openers going missing. And can I just say what a bitch it is to replace a garage door opener?
Oh, I'm like, sure.
Especially in the 80s.
Ugh. Yeah.
Yeah, that's just rude.
Right?
I mean, there's some things. I mean, you stab somebody in the chest with an ice pick.
They just sew that back that up shit and heals move on. Up. Right.
Right. But a garage door opener? Shit, that'd take you 6-8 months to replace.
And you got to go to Sears.
Ugh.
You got to go to Sears. You got to get a program. And then they treat you like you're stupid.
Wouldn't it just be easier to buy a whole new garage door opener?
Probably, but that's still, what a pain in the ass.
Oh, for sure.
So, easier to buy a new house.
Right.
Lori says she has no idea how these things happened. It wasn't her and her
wasn't
parents.
Me. Don't look at
wasn't me.
Me.
Not it. Her parents step in and offer financial restitution for the damaged items.
Her parents are a problem.
Yes. So Lori's...
They're enablers.
Yes, they are.
So the babysitting's not going so good. So she decides she's going to go back to college, and she enrolls at Northwestern, and her father got her a dorm room on campus. But who thinks this is going to go well? Anyone?
Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah. I think a roommate's in for a summer.
Well, first of all, probably. How are you 30 years old and get a dorm room?
Yeah, it's like that Rodney Dangerfield movie.
Back to school.
When he goes back to school.
Yeah, how do you, 30 years old and you get a dorm room? Fuck.
Ugh.
So, Lori's behavior, surprise, is bizarre and disturbing. She got raw meat, and what the fuck, where do you find raw meat on a college campus? And she would hide it in the couch cushions in the common areas. She would also collect garbage and put it in students' mailboxes. And the university called her parents and said, please come get her. Her dorm room was so filthy and filled with bad food and this is
gross.
Really gross. She would regularly pee on the floor in her dorm room.
Sober.
So, yeah, she would sleep in her car because her room stunk so badly. And it's thought that, once again, her parents got out their checkbook and made it go away.
Good Lord.
So Lori moves back home, and again, she's babysitting. And she's back to damaging furniture and stealing food. Excuse me.
Do those people not talk? Like, the people that are hiring her, I assume, you know, you're in this little Glencoe.
How did she get a reference?
Yeah, you're in this little Glencoe, Illinois. I'm sure these people talk. What the fuck, dude? Who's hiring her?
And it's like, well, I'm going to need 3 references. And she gives, well, she may or may not have stabbed me in the chest with an ice pick.
Right.
You know, I'm not really sure.
Convicted? Never convicted.
But, yeah, she left wet laundry in the thing. You know, and then, oh, yeah, the other lady. Well, you know, other than the fact that she used to put spoiled ground beef under my couch cushions.
Right.
You know, she was okay.
And tear up my good leather couch.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
So
it's just that,
and you know, back in the '80s, they still had shag
carpet. That's what the problem with these
millennials are. Oh yeah,
shag carpet. Oh, shag carpet. You know that shit holds everything, everything. You know they still had shag carpet. You know she was pissing on that stuff. You know she was leaving food. Nasty.
So, Chuck, remember how you talked about, like, the crazy sort of draws you in because you know it's going to be a good couple of weeks? So the summer of 87, Lori is back in Evanston near the campus of Northwestern. Her dad got her an apartment there. And Lori was known to hang out at the fraternities. And it's possible she was romantically linked to some of these frat boys.
Well, she would spend her time riding the elevators.
Yes.
And, you know, and I'm not judging her for that, because who amongst us has not spent a day and a half riding an elevator? You know, up and down. It, just me.
Okay. It's just, you see them. It's a, it's really a Darwinian thing, because you see the women and you know that this is going to impact. Basically, it's like a whitewater rafting trip on places they tell you, no matter what you do, don't get in that part of the river. And when once they tell you that, you got to go in that part of the river, because you got to see what it's like, and you got to say, yeah, I did that.
But why?
And you know it's going to end up with you laying broken on some rocks.
And drowning.
But yeah, but, you know, the waves and the rush of adrenaline and just dealing with it, you know, it's just...
Live in the moment.
Well...
You got... Yeah, it's the whole YOLO thing, you know, and...
It's not that. It's not that at all.
But, you know, and I will say that when
boomer.
I was in college, there were times that that I would meet a particular... female.
You were only in college for 20 minutes. Literally.
No, I was in college for 2 years. Mm. 2 full years till they told me I was, well, anyway, washed up. And
yeah.
Anyway, and some of these girls were attracted to, you know, if you played a sport.
Yeah, the mullet.
And you knew they was crazy, but And you knew that at any given moment, they might just punch you in the side of the head for something.
Sure.
You know, I mean, there was... Or try to set your car on fire. Or do whatever.
Steal your kidney and leave you in a bathtub full of ice.
Sure, sure.
Exactly.
It's a risk he was willing to take.
The problem is that you got... You're 19, 20 years old, you're full of testosterone, and it's telling your brain... No, that looks like a good bet.
Is it telling your brain that?
You know.
Risk it.
Well, yes.
Which brain?
It's not really telling your brain that, but you're thinking, it's like playing poker and you get dealt a 2 and a 4 and you think, you know, I can, you know.
I'm
going to
risk it.
I feel good about this hand. But like, I'm going
to
risk it.
But here's the thing, not to stop this story that I totally intended to stop, but her parents keep sending her back. Like, so at what point does the college say, no, stop, she's banned from the campus, she can't come on the campus anymore?
But at this time, she's living in an apartment near the campus, and she wasn't enrolled in classes.
She's riding the elevators, she's ended up in all these, like, at what point, I mean, her parents keep sending her away, which I totally get, but they keep sending her just, you know, oh, yeah, I know you had problems at Northwestern, so we'll just get you an apartment beside campus, because that's what the problem was. That's the problem. I mean, come on. Freaking, oh my God, these parents. I'm sorry.
See, and you leave with these ladies, and you know there's trouble, because on the way to wherever you're going, they have to stop, and it's like, well, we got to stop here and get a jar of peanut butter. We got to go to the hardware store and get a little.
And they're trying to eat their own face while you're driving in the car. What?
Yeah,
I mean,
you know, it's going to turn out badly, but I'm going to risk it.
Ugh. Well,
so Brandy, would you like to talk about Lori in November of 87?
So Looney Lori was being managed by a psychiatrist during this time. But in November of 1987, not long after her 30th birthday, oh, God damn these people, her parents moved her to student housing in Madison, Wisconsin. She's 30 in a dorm. Please stop, people. She also started.
Well, she kept pissing on the carpet at home.
Well,
they had to get her out of the house.
Then put some little puppy pads down. But, you know, she's your responsibility. She also started several new treatment techniques. She saw a new psychiatrist, worked with a behavioral therapist, and began taking clomipramine.
Clomipramine.
Oh, close enough. Yes, I was very close. And anafrenil. Oh.
Anafrenil.
That's what I said.
Clomipramine, anafrenil.
Yeah, that's amazing. You did so much better. According to our favorite physician.
I've taken them both, devil.
According to
I've taken them both.
Yeah. According to our favorite physician, Dr. Google. Oh, not WebMD. Clomipramine is used to treat OCD, and it's an antidepressant. Surprisingly, the new treatments didn't seem to help because Lori was still an asshole and still riding the elevators for hours at a time, flipping TV channels rapidly, and it was thought that she could have an eating disorder. In December of 1987, she decided to buy herself a gift and stopped by the local gun store where she selected a .22 Beretta. All great ideas. In March.
I wonder what happened to a .357 Magnum.
Well, her dad locked it up, right?
Right. Yeah.
Okay.
Well. In March of 1988, Lori stopped attending her appointments with her psychiatrist and therapist. God, who could have seen that coming? Her psychiatrist and her father tried to persuade her to check herself into the hospital for inpatient treatment, but Lori said, nah, I'm good.
Nah, fam.
Nah, yeah. While in Wisconsin, Lori resumed her pattern of making repetitive hang-up calls to her college boyfriend, the nice doctor that she'd dated while in Arizona State. Oh, my God, move on.
Right.
With Lori in Wisconsin and her ex in Illinois, the calls were crossing state lines and the FBI became involved. About time. An indictment is drawn up, but the ex-boyfriend, either afraid of Lori, ding ding, or afraid of garnering headlines, gets cold feet. She was making additional threats to people in Tucson, and the FBI became involved and they advised law enforcement in Madison, Wisconsin, that something was wrong with Lori Dan. So,
what?
That, well, and those are the hardcore detectives that figure shit out really quickly.
Right.
They, you know, hey, there might be something wrong
with this
chick.
They called him Rizzoli and Isles.
They sure did. Matlock, yeah, all of that. They suspected that she owned a gun. Well, she actually owned three guns and an ice pick, so she's armed to the teeth and ready to roll. During the first few days of May 1988, Lori flexes her communication skills, sending a letter to the hospital where her ex is employed. Good gravy. And she again accuses him of sexually assaulting her at the hospital. Days later, a janitor in the building where she lives entered the garbage room where he finds Lori Dan laying on the floor under a trash bag, curled in a fetal position. Her parents are contacted, and Lori Dan returns to Glencoe, Illinois, where she never should have left. The day after she returns to her parents' home in Illinois, the FBI arrive in Madison, Wisconsin, to talk to her about death threats. Well, while back at home, Lori becomes domestic. She never managed to cook food for her husband, Russell Dan, while they were married. But now she's baking and mixing and preparing things left and right. Now she's just fucking Martha Stewart.
Right.
This includes Rice Krispie treats that she delivers to the fraternity houses in Evanston. Aw. They were very special treats and not in a good way. When Lori was in Madison, Wisconsin, she'd done a fair amount of shoplifting. You know, we all have hobbies.
Right.
She stole clothes, wigs, and hit up the hardware store where she stole packages of arsenic. Oh, perfect. The treats were laced with arsenic, and fortunately, they tasted terrible. And if anyone tried them, they might have a bite or two before throwing the item away. While the poison snacks were dangerous, they were so nasty no one wanted to eat them, and no one was injured in her attempts to poison them. Back at home, Lori.
Okay.
What?
I got to say, I just did a Google image search.
Yeah.
I'm a risk it.
Really?
Yeah, she had that kind of Katie Couric look, you know. She had the short hair, the bob cut.
A lot of jaw,
cut.
Though, right?
Katie Couric.
A lot of jaw, but and I didn't get to see below the neck, but I'm imagining she had some work done there too. So yeah, she was one of those that you would think, and she has this kind of she's not.
No. Oh, no.
Yeah, no, you got to find the right pictures of her. You can't get a mugshot. That's not that one. Not the
what
one you find on Wikipedia.
What the actual hell, Chuck?
Look
no.
some other
pictures.
No, because she looked kind of quiet, and those are the ones that are just absolutely crazy.
No.
Right,
no.
She
you
is
you can
absolutely
tell
crazy.
Oh, no.
No, I mean, once you get them rolling, you know, once you get them back to the apartment, they're crazy.
She is kind of... She is kind of got that Jay Leno jaw.
Yes, but there's a lot of jaw. Rumor Willis.
Yeah, there's a lot of jaw. But I'm curious because, you know, there's nothing like... they didn't make her better with this plastic surgery. Like, she
Are
was
you sure?
No, she's an attractive woman.
Not seeing it. Not seeing it. Nope.
Oh,
not worth it.
Well, you got to remember back in the day what people looked like back in the day. And back in the day, she would have been one that was, that you would have thought, oh, she's attractive. And then you would have sensed the crazy and you would have thought, oh, I'm all in now.
No. No. Nope. I'm out. But anyway, so she's cooking shit. She's lacing stuff with arsenic. And she decides that she wants to return to babysitting because that's her calling. She pays a visit to a family she'd worked for previously, who should fucking know better. Is it the Rusche family?
I'd say Rush, but you
Rush,
do you.
Is it still Rush? Rush is fine. And they asked if they needed her services. Family says, we're about to move out of state, so no, we're good. I wonder if they just made that up, but I guess not. Lori offers to take their two children to a county fair the next day, and the parents, who are in the middle of a big move and evidently don't want to move actually with their children, agree that it would be nice and a getaway for the kids and some free time for the busy parents. And she tells them she'll be back at 9 o'clock the next morning. Charles.
Now, see, and I just want to add another thought.
Oh, good.
You know how women are often, I don't know about you, Nina, Devil, I can't even begin to try to go get into what goes on in your brain. But you know how women are sometimes attracted to the bad boys?
Sure.
Mm-hmm. You know how that goes, right?
Yeah.
So with men, with especially young men, and you're starting to date or whatever, you're kind of negotiating the ground rules as to what, you know, When you hit the bedroom, what are the boundaries? You know what I mean? What will you do? What won't you do? What are your hard nose? Once she says, you know what, I stabbed a motherfucker in the chest with an ice pick. I'm down for anything. See, that's the draw to women like that. That's the appeal to women like that. She stabbed somebody in the chest with an ice pick. She's down for anything. That's our downfall, really.
Wow.
So can
because
you,
our survival instinct doesn't kick in because our other instincts are kicking in more.
No.
See, it's a psychology thing, Devil.
Is
no.
it?
Yeah, oh, it is. I mean, a woman that's willing to stab somebody in the chest with an ice pick, they're pretty much down for anything. So.
No.
So they're not going to say, no, I'm not going to do that. Now, they might stab you in the chest with an ice pick when you're done, but if you don't, you know, cuddle right or whatever. But anyway, Lori gets home, okay, and she begins drawing up plans preparing for the events of May 20th. She prepares more tainted food. She mixes arsenic in water, draws it up into a syringe, and then uses the syringe to put the poison into juice boxes.
Nice.
That's some cruel-ass shit right there. On the morning of May 20th, Laura
she's very busy, of course, you know, mixing up all her evil brews. She delivers poison snacks and juice boxes to several homes in Winnetka, Highland Park, and Glencoe. Now, this is why we are all suspicious of the neighborhood welcome wagon lady. See? Mm-hmm. People start showing up at your door. You don't know them. Yeah, they want to give you that starter bread stuff or whatever it is. No, and you know, starter bread, do you know what I'm talking about?
I do.
Yes.
That's like the chain mail of food.
It is.
You're not doing anybody a favor when you give them starter bread. So, ladies, please stop doing that. Now, fortunately, her attempts are clumsy and amateurish, much like her attempts to poison the frat brothers in Evanston. No one is made ill by her snacks or drinks. Which is, you know, now so they think she's the nice lady bringing stuff over. How could they not get ill? I don't get that.
They wouldn't eat it. Well, everything was so nasty, they'd take like one bite and be like, okay, nope.
Never mind. Yeah. Well, when she arrives at the Rush home to pick up the boys for their trip to the fair, she serves them milk that she has tainted with arsenic mixture.
Jesus.
But the boys are like, what the fuck? This? They spit it out on it. It's like cottage cheese. I mean, get this out of here. So they just don't drink it. Now, they pour it in the sink when her back is turned. Their mother, Marion, will be home that day doing chores and prepping for the move while the boys are out with Lori. Now, instead of taking the boys to the fair as promised, she drove to Ravenna Elementary School in Highland Park. Now, this location is notable because it's where the children of her former sister-in-law attended classes. Lori launched a firebomb into the building.
Jesus H. Christ.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, think about this. You're just driving down the road, going to the fair, boys, going to the fair. Oh, first I got a firebomb in the school.
Pit stop.
Yeah. I mean, these kids were like Ferris Bueller. What did you boys do today? Well, we firebombed the school, Mom. We went to the fair. Oh, we went to the fair, and little Bobby, he won a teddy bear. That was right after Lori firebombed the school. So anyway, Lori launched this firebomb into the building. She put gasoline into a plastic bag, tossed it right into the building. But fortunately, it was a dud. God, she can't get shit right.
No.
Now, while there was a small fire, it was quickly extinguished and no one was injured. I guess she just never looked up Molotov cocktail. Now, at 9:30 a.m., Dan is at the Young Men's Jewish Council in Highland Park. She attempts to enter the building while carrying a gas can. That doesn't look suspicious at all. But a custodian stops her. Lori fled back to her car where the two young boys awaited as she completed her strange errands. These kids got to be thinking, what in the fuck?
Worst babysitter ever. Mom don't love us.
Yeah, I know, Mom. This is worse than when we had Uncle Buck here. So anyway, she drove the boys back home. The mother was surprised to find them back so soon, and she was very surprised to find that their clothes were all singed, but she was in the basement doing laundry when the boys came down to greet her. When the mother attempted to come upstairs, she found that...
It's not funny, man.
I know, but it's just like...
Oh, Colonel.
She found... God damn.
She's like a tornado right now through this little town. She attempted
to come upstairs. She found that her house was on fire. God. Damn.
I bet they don't hire her again.
No, you're not going to get a good reference from me.
No.
Now, Lori Dunn had set fire to the stairwell, trapping the mother and sons in the basement. Now, they were able to escape the home through a basement window. It's about 10:30 a.m. at this time. And Lori,
good Lord.
Lori's much like the Army. She does
more before 9 a.m. Than most people do all day.
Than most killers do all day. So anyway, meanwhile, Lori, she's headed to a nearby elementary school, Hubbard Woods Elementary. Now, it's likely that she heard the sirens from the fire trucks racing to put out the fire she'd set in the stairwell as she entered the building. Wait, now, once inside the school,
I don't understand this. Hold on. I have questions. My first question is, okay, school is in session, clearly, when she goes in there. Why aren't these fucking kids that she just took on her, you know, Appetite for Destruction tour, why aren't they in fucking school?
I didn't see anything about their ages, so it's possible they were like 4 and 5. Maybe they weren't in school
too
yet.
Too young. Oh, my God.
They were getting ready to move, and Mom had already pulled them out of school.
Maybe. And maybe they were too young. But that would,
either way.
Well, no,
so
either
traumatic.
Way. Well, yeah, no, they've got, those memories last a lifetime.
Oh, yeah.
Well, you know, but, you know, if you're a 4 or 5 year old kid, this is kind of it's like, oh, there's some pretty cool shit going on. Because you're like, you know,
I love fire.
You're 4, 5, 6, 10 years. Yeah, you love seeing shit catch on fire. This is, you know, like, ooh, check this out. It's like, you know, 4th of July. My babysitter's just got fireworks with her all the time. Well, anyway, Lori heads to this school. And once inside the school, she's carrying a plastic bag containing her handguns. Now, remember how the police told her father that they wanted Lori's guns? He refused to turn over the weapons, but said he would make sure that they were locked up and secure. Well, he wasn't really honest with the popo there.
He's a lying motherfucker.
Lori had full access to the guns and ammunition, and she had them with her on May 20th at Hubbard Woods. Now, she steps into a washroom and at the school encounters a 6-year-old boy, Robert Trossman, and shoots him once. And then drops the gun to the floor and leaves the washroom. Now, obviously, the sound of his gunshot is very loud in the school, but no real alarm is raised because who is assuming?
Right.
Yeah, who's thinking that's a gun? You know, you probably think that something just fell. So everyone assumes the sound of the report was something other than what it really was. Now, thankfully, fellow students will come upon a wounded child and get help for him almost immediately. She finds an open door and walks into the classroom where she sits down near the substitute teachers in the middle of a lesson for class. And, you know, substitute teachers go in knowing they're going to have a hard time.
Oh, God. I used to substitute teach, and I hated it so much. I got
the substitute teach one day.
Ugh.
For kindergartners.
Oh, that wouldn't have been too bad. They're like
puppies. No. They're scheming little bastards. You know what they did to me? They lied to me. I asked them what time they had to be at lunch. And they said, we have to be down at the lunchroom at 10:45. Quarter to 11, I line them up. I take them all down to the lunchroom.
Why do you believe
that? The lunch ladies.
That's
the lunch
better
ladies
question.
Are looking at me. Yeah. They're looking at me like, what the hell are you doing?
What grade was
They're
this?
They're not supposed to be here till 12. They were kindergartners.
Okay,
they
so you time. Asked a kindergartner what time they were supposed
well,
to
they
be
Well, they went
somewhere.
To lunch every day. I said, what time do you guys line up for lunch? 11:45. I said, okay. So
Who
I take them down there.
Who the fuck let you teach, substitute teach? How is that a thing that happened?
It was an emergency. Shaping young minds. I mean,
it was
what could be better?
It had to have been an emergency. They couldn't find a chimp or another
they
kindergartner
were waiting
to
for
lead
a substitute
that class?
Teacher to get there. They were waiting for a substitute teacher to get there to ask me because I used to drop my boys off and I, you know, I had a job where I had a flexible schedule and I said, sure, I'll do it. And I get them down there and you know what? These kids are laughing, so I get back, and there was another substitute, or another kindergarten teacher that I knew very well.
Sweet baby Jesus.
Well, anyway, so I take them back to the room, and I'm like, you know what? You guys waste 15 minutes of my time. You ain't going to lunch till 12:15. And then the other kindergarten teacher comes in to get me, and she's like, no, you can't really do that.
Yeah.
And I said, oh, I can do it. So they lied to me about 15 minutes. They get 15 minutes punishment. She's like, please, Chuck, don't do this. Don't do this.
Yeah.
And I said, nope, they're sitting. And she's like, Chuck, we're going to get calls from parents. We're going to get blah, blah, blah. So they got the best of me. You can't trust those little.
So you got bested by kindergartners because you listened to them is what I'm getting. You got bested by 6-year-olds. So my takeaway from this is that you should never have contact with children.
I'm not smarter than a 6-year-old.
Yeah.
But they did have one especially problematic child. His name was Bobby.
They're always
Velcro. They called him a Velcro aide, you know, one aide that stuck with him all day.
Oh, yeah, because he had behavioral problems.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they had Teacher Appreciation Day. And, you know, so we had a big lunch for the teachers and thing. But his IA could not go because she had to stay with him. So I'm in office and I said, you know, go on down there. I'll stay here with Bobby.
This is clearly before any of these things we have now in place. Because now you have to, you know, go through a background check and you have to have a badge and you have to have all this shit. So now, clearly they're letting everybody.
Well, actually, I coached for that school, so I'd already had the background and fingerprints done.
Sure.
So the teacher, the aide said, you know, he doesn't really do well with other people. And I said, you know, just go down, grab your lunch. I'll sit here with him for 10 minutes, 15 minutes, however long it takes you. We'll be fine, won't we, Bobby? And she said, Chuck, he will bite you.
I'm out on that one.
And I said, no, I just looked at him and I said, Bobby, let me explain something to you, son. He's in fifth grade, so he's old enough to understand us. I said, I do not work for the school. I cannot lose my job. If you bite me, I will bite you back. Do we understand each other? That's a true story.
Do you know,
me and Bobby sat there for a half an hour and had the best time? So anyway, I digress. But yes, I have taught kids in a school situation before. Now, so this substitute teacher, thinking she's going to have an easy day because she's in a good school system, she doesn't understand why Lori is suddenly in her room. And she thinks at first that she could be a parent or another staff member. Lori produces the gun and orders the children to move to one side of the room. Then she begins firing, and the substitute struggles with her. Now, this is going one step above, you know, trying to get the gun, stop the shooting, to do something, you know. But Lori shoots during this and kills an 8-year-old boy, Nicholas Corwin, and wounds 5 other students before running out of the building. Now, while Corwin will be the only fatality, the other children who were shot were seriously injured. Now, Lori Dan is in a panic as she drives away from the school. She guides her car, a late model Toyota, at a high speed down a dead-end street. Now, she realizes too late that the road is ending. She loses control of the car and crashes into a tree. Lori steps out of the damaged vehicle, strips off her blood-soaked shorts. Now, speaking of blood-soaked shorts,
tell us about this, Chuck.
Huh?
Go ahead. I'm listening. Tell us. Tell us about blood-soaked shorts.
Speaking of blood-soaked shorts, all the period panty ads on social media, while I appreciate the sentiment, it's not always a pleasant view as I'm scrolling in my Facebook feed.
Jesus,
I don't
Christ.
Know how those ended up in my feed, but
nobody wants to see those.
It's just bizarre. Eh. Yes. No. Well, anyway, she wraps a plastic bag around her waist because, you know, she wants to try to
modest.
She's trying
natural,
to blend in.
I suppose. Yeah.
She's trying to be casual.
She's trying to blend in. Runs up to a nearby house where she enters the back door. Inside, she finds Ruth Andrews and a son, 20-year-old Philip. They take a wild-eyed look at half-crazy, half-naked Lori. It tells them that she's been raped and shot her attacker, and then the police don't understand. Ruth Andrews was always kind to Lori, comforted her, and even got her a clean pair of pants to wear.
God, I hate this lady more and more. I hate Lori Dan more and more and more as we go along.
Oh, she's...
Hey,
She's going to hold them hostage for 6 hours. And during that time, she called her parents, and her mother begged her to just turn herself in. Please don't hurt anybody else. Then you can just come home. And Philip, the 20-year-old, even spoke with Edith, Lori's mother, and said, look, just come over and get Lori. And Edith said, oh, I can't. I don't drive.
So she was crazy, too. Okay,
good. Sounds like it. During one of these phone calls, Philip turns to his mother and, like, gestures, like, leave, make a run for it. And his mom runs out the door, and Philip runs after her, but Lori comes after them with a gun, and Philip wrestles with her. He's trying to get the gun away, and she shoots him in the chest. And he staggers out of the house onto the lawn, and he's seriously wounded. At the time of this shooting, Philip Andrews was a competitive swimmer. He was in phenomenal physical condition, and he will survive the shooting. And after he recovers, he completes his education and joins the FBI. And he spends his entire professional career working to stop violence in schools and communities.
Good for him.
Yeah. So after shooting Philip in the chest, she runs up the stairs and turns the gun on herself. So the standoff and the strange life of Lori Wasserman Dan are now over.
Jesus.
After the shooting, police want to interview the Wassermans. They want to talk to Norman and Edith, but the request is denied. The police show up at the house trying to search Lori's bedroom, but the Wassermans only allow them a quick search before they are asked to leave the house.
They're so helpful.
Oh, my gosh.
These parents are the worst.
They clean out her room immediately following her death, either removing, concealing, or destroying any evidence that may have been left behind.
Evidence of what? Who cares? She's dead.
After the events of May 20th, the Wassermans left Illinois for good and relocated to Florida. And Florida, I'm sorry, but of course they moved to Florida.
Yeah. They did blend in.
Yes. Probably in Boca Raton, because remember they have that second home there.
Yeah.
Lori's former husband, Russell Dan, he believes that he survived a murder attempt at the hands of his soon-to-be ex-wife. He did go on to remarry to a woman named Lori. And Russell Dan became an advocate for victims of domestic violence. In an interview with the Chicago Tribune, he said, quote, I was getting attacked, I was being stalked, and people wouldn't take me seriously. It was scary, and I was much stronger than Lori was. I can't even imagine what it must be like to be a woman in that situation.
Good for Russell Dan.
Yeah. In 1989, Joel and Linda Corwin, the parents of the little boy that Lori murdered at the elementary school, they sued the Wassermans for damages. They believe that the Wassermans' negligence and refusal to seek inpatient mental health treatment for their daughter resulted in the death of their 8-year-old son. So the Wassermans, I know you guys will be surprised, the Wassermans lawyered up, and they're trying to avoid any payout and any responsibility. But the courts prevailed. The Corwins eventually agreed to a settlement when they felt that the court made it clear that the Wassermans were responsible, at least in part, for the events of May 20th. Lori's parents never spoke to the press. They never spoke to the families. They chose to hide behind their lawyers and shield themselves from scrutiny while blocking others from receiving long-awaited answers. The only statement they made came from Lori's father, and it was issued a few days after the events of May 20th, and it said, quote, Mrs. Wasserman and I reach out to all the families and their suffering. We suffer with you. Our prayer is that time will help alleviate the pain.
Fuck off.
That was pretty shitty.
Minimalistic
of them. Fuck off. Let's figure out
the absolute least
we can do. Yeah.
Yeah.
If families or the community wanted an apology or an explanation, it never happened.
The explanation is she's crazy and she was allowed to run feral and they kept fucking covering for her and putting her up in places that she shouldn't have been. And they can fuck right the hell off. And when they get there, they can fuck off some more. Fuck these motherfuckers.
The bitch of it is if she'd actually gotten like serious mental health intervention, it's likely she could have led a more normal life.
Yeah. But they fucked around with her. Because it comes down to, they didn't lack resources.
That me and my son have all the time. And you do, obviously you do true crime. So you have done tons of serial killers and murderers and things like that.
is that when you're that, there are some people that, yes, you have to acknowledge the horrible things they've done, but how responsible are they really for it? You know, I mean, really, how responsible are those people for what they've done? Because...
Like Lori?
I don't know that she could even... It doesn't sound like she was having fun with this stuff. I mean, she was just...
You know, she...
The gears weren't grinding right upstairs.
I agree.
They weren't.
They were so far off.
But she knew right from wrong because... She claimed rape. She's done everything. She knew what she did wasn't right. She knew what she did was going to get her in trouble. Because when she wrecked the car and went into the Andrew's house or whatever it was, she claimed rape. She didn't just walk in there and say, hey, guess what? I just shot up a school, and now I'm going to hold you hostage. She knew what she did was wrong.
Yeah, but that's just a basic instinct for survival.
No, she knew what she did was wrong. But her parents are completely responsible. This is a mess of shit that could have been stopped.
Well, that's what I mean.
Them.
Her parents were responsible for that. I would put much more weight on the parents than I would her.
But at 30?
Because she should have been locked up somewhere in a secure mental facility.
But at 30-some years
old...
Because
she was a danger to other people.
But at 30-some years old, where does she become responsible? Where does she become responsible for her actions?
She can't. Unfortunately, her mental illness made it impossible for her to view reality through an appropriate lens. And I'm not defending Lori Dan. What she did was horrible. But I think when you're profoundly mentally ill, your perception of reality is skewed.
Well, and I get that.
Profoundly. And her dad said he took away the gun and he lied
about
that.
Yeah, and he didn't. And that's part of the thing, too, is that she was profoundly mentally ill. Her parents had resources. And I get, okay, she's profoundly mentally ill, but her parents had the resources to help her, and they didn't. And not only did they not, she never faced consequences for anything that she did because her parents covered everything up. So, I get that. I really do. But she's 30-some years old. You know, she knew things were wrong. She did things that she knew was wrong because she tried to cover them up.
Correct.
So, you know, she knew what she was doing was wrong. And she didn't give a shit. There's nothing in her that said, you know what's a good idea? I'm going to go shoot a little boy. But she did it. There's no reason why. There's no reason nothing. She did it. But she knew that wasn't right. Or she'd have just killed the kids that were with her.
Right.
Well, so, even in it, I go back to one of the ones that struck me the most was that we have done on History Dweebs was Carl Panzram.
Now, that guy went through some shit.
That's what I mean. He was a normal, you know, kind of little precocious 12-year-old boy. Mm. Yeah, he was. I mean, up to the time he jumps on that train and, you know, decides to hop a train and got literally raped by a boxcar full of hobos. Ugh. He wanted to do nothing but kill men the rest of his life. He had a compulsion. I mean, I don't know. You know, that broke him. It snapped his brain.
But nobody ever broke Lori. I think Lori started out damaged.
No, she just was... Yeah, she was just born with...
Well, but when you're in high school and your parents go, ooh, yeah, we're going to have to fix that jaw. We're going to have
to... Those knock.
We're going to have to shave that down a bit and rearrange your face just slightly. You're pretty, but you're not that
gonna
smart.
You're going to get a good husband with a B cup, Lori. Yeah. We're going to have to...
You're kind of stupid.
Your parents did her no favors.
No. But, I mean, you know, you're kind of stupid, so you need to be pretty, and you're just not there. So, but, I mean, think about it. When you're in high school and you're 15, 16, you feel like shit about yourself half the time anyway. And then the people that are supposed to love you and care for you say, no.
But can you imagine, like, your daughter calling you or someone calling you and saying, your daughter's here, she's covered in blood, she's holding us hostage. Come get her.
Oh, yeah.
And she's like,
yeah, I don't drive.
You don't drive. Call a cab. You know, ride your bike, walk, get over here. Like,
or just drive. Because at that point, I don't think that you're going to, I think that we're looking at the greater good.
Getting a call saying, your daughter keeps pissing on the carpet and sleeping in her car.
Oh, and leaving ground meat in the sofa.
Yeah.
and leave it. Yeah, I mean, I can imagine my mom would be slapping my head all the way down the hallway. Right. What the hell? I raised you better than that, you know. And this woman, she just get her a different apartment. But, you know, get it, make sure you get a linoleum so we can just wipe it up. Don't get that shag carpet no more.
Well, in all the it's things her parents threw money at, none of it was actually to help her.
No.
It was like they couldn't see how ill she was.
Well, it was to help themselves, because who wants that stigma?
Right. So her dad...
Well, and this was... Go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say her dad passed away in 2006, and her mother, Edith, passed away in 2010. And the three members of the Wasserman family are buried in Shalom Memorial Park in Arlington Heights, Illinois.
Ugh.
Well, and I think you get it that into those communities where you are, you know, where you want to pretend everything's all right.
Yeah,
you want to create a nice facade that you have the normal family and. Yeah, nothing to see here.
Nobody.
Well,
has a
that was really
family.
What was going on.
Well, and now, like me and my friends call those people now like Facebook families. Mm-hmm. They're the people that always post, "Oh, this is what I'm making for dinner, and it's like this nice plate." Or, you know, I got a girlfriend that, of course, has found Jesus or whatever it is she's doing. I'm calling bullshit.
Was he?
She's
missing?
Got these. Well, he was, and evidently she found him.
That's
and good. Yeah, yeah. So we're thankful, but. You know, and she's got these two little boys and everything is, oh, my little boys get along and oh, my little boys are this and oh, my prince and my king are blah, 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 blah. And I'm thinking, you know what? I want to see them fighting. I need to see that because everything with her is, oh, everything's great and fine. And oh, we're just, you know, this is we're just managing through the fuck off.
Yeah.
You know, I'm getting ready to kill every fucker in my house with a penis because they're on my goddamn nerves. Post that shit. That's real. This bullshit is not. So these Facebook fucking parents that just, you know, everything's great. Oh, my kids are wonderful. No, your kids are assholes like everybody else's kids. They're all assholes. And they remain assholes until they're in their 20s. That's just the way it is. Let me see that.
And they stay assholes. We were texting, you know, of course. I've said before, the only thing worse than being actually in my family is being part of my family message group.
Oh, Lord.
And Tanner, my 25-year-old, one of the twins, says...
God, are they 25
He's
now?
Talking about... Yeah, they're 25 years old.
Hashtag Jesus. Old.
And he said, he said, well, the good thing... I said, are you doing all right? You know, how are you guys holding up? And Tan said, I'm doing all right. He said, you know, I mean, the reality is for the great, great majority of people, you know, if you're under 55, it's, you know, it's really not, it's going to make you kind of sick, but, you know, you're pretty safe. And I just typed in, I'm 56. And he said, oh, I was talking about, and he put in capitals, me. Then he wrote, these are apocalypse rules. You can go fuck yourself.
What?
So.
Wow.
He makes a good point.
So, yeah, that's basically how it is with my children.
You know,
they don't grow out of being a...
No.
It's just fucking ridiculous. But anyway, so...
But they haven't stabbed anybody with ice picks as far as
that you know. Yeah,
yet.
See.
Well, and on a serious note, I hope everyone who's listening is doing well, that you're safe, that you're with friends, or if you're sheltering by yourself, you have people to be in contact with.
You can always be in the group.
Yep.
Be in contact with the group. There's always somebody there. And, you know, like I said, stay safe, but 6 feet away from me.
6 feet away, and it seems to, I don't know, it seems to be working in Ohio.
Does it? So,
well, I mean, we're not getting a huge number, well, we're not testing anybody.
Yeah, so let's settle down. Of course we're getting a huge number.
But we're not hearing from our hospitals that we don't have equipment and we don't have, you know, things like that, so.
We're actually going to sew masks today, cloth masks.
And you should, yeah.
And I was going to ask you. I saw that you put that on Facebook. What do you? What do you? What do you use? What material are you using to?
do that.
Use a bra cup, girl. Use a bra cup.
We're actually using
they don't breathe
cotton. I had some cotton scraps from some of the girls' projects, and we're just going to put together some masks. And, you know, if we go out, because I'm a face toucher, I'm constantly with the allergies right now. My eyes always itch. My nose is running. It's super sexy. But hopefully having a mask on when I go to the grocery store or to the pharmacy will help me not touch my face.
I did not realize how much, or actually I didn't realize how little throughout the day I wash my hands.
Ew.
Ew.
I mean, you go to the bathroom, obviously you wash your hands, you're getting ready to eat lunch, you wash your hands. You know what I mean? You get into that habit, but then when you get into this, you know, yesterday, there's a little restaurant that me and my son love. It's a little kind of like diner type place.
Diner.
Yeah, and they're staying open for carryouts, right?
Yeah.
And they make, it's a Greek restaurant, but they make this Greek pizza that is the best in the world. So, you know, in hoping that they're going to be all right, I order two pizzas from them, you know, to pick them up to go. And you realize that, you know, you get home, you take the bags that the other, you know, all the food's in, you throw away, you know, and as soon as I get back in my car, and as I get in there, there's three other people waiting for carry out, and they're all spaced out about 10 feet apart. And then you get home, and it makes you so cognizant of things that you take all the bags, you throw them away, and then you wash your hands because you've touched something that might, you know, have touched something. And then you put the food, you get the food all ready to eat, and then you go and wash your hands again.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just, you know, so you realize that, you know, you normally throughout the course of the day, you wash your hands, you know, four or five times. And now you've gotten to where you're washing your hands 20, 25 times in a day.
Yeah.
And it's almost like it was, we talked about people with OCD, but this is... This is, you know,
to
survival.
Keep you alive. Yeah.
To keep you alive, yeah. But
we're in
but
the
you
apocalypse.
Don't really realize how many things you kind of learn. You know, you hit the elevator button with your elbow, you hit doorknobs with your elbow. People at work know that, you know, in Brandy's office, my office, there's nothing you can't tell me that you can't tell me from the doorway.
Yeah.
You know, don't come over to my desk.
That's my general
rule. There's
no
reason for that.
Wait, yeah. I thought Brandy had snacks on her desk, so you'd have to, like, sneak
no, Brandy
in my
has
office.
Shelves in her office. Brandy has bookcases and shelves she keeps snacks in. So
if
we got a whole
I have
lot
a cupboard.
In there, we're going to be pretty good.
Yeah, I have a cupboard.
Excellent.
I know. It's kind of a big deal. I have file cabinets and stuff, but that's not the point. So, everybody, rest assured that Chuck and Tim and I are doing the Lord's work because we are going to work every day.
Thank you.
And
we are.
Yes, we are. Yes. You're there. I don't know what you're acting like. Yes, most of the time.
Are.
We go to work every day, and we'll continue to do this podcast every Sunday for the most part if Chuck shows up. So, I mean, we're like you mentioned earlier, we're like the USO. We're just doing our part to make sure that everybody has something that they can distract themselves with.
Like to think what the podcast version of FEMA.
Yes. And on another note, I started watching the Netflix thing about the tiger guy.
Yeah.
Very entertaining. Very interesting. So if you get a chance, definitely watch it because it is something else. I started to watch the pandemic thing.
No.
And it freaked me out so bad that I stopped watching it because it just freaked me out. So
I'm burning through almost a book a day. So,
Dr. Seuss
books
don't
count. I did not think I could actually know more.
Dr. Seuss books
don't
count. I did
not think I actually had brain capacity to put more knowledge up here. But, yeah, I'm going through about a book a day.
Super sweet.
So,
I'm going through about a bottle a day.
There you go.
Yeah, that's true.
Cheers.
All right, guys.
That's true.
So.
Thank you.
All right, well, thank you for being on the show.
Thank you, everyone.
Ms. Instead.
Yes, thank you, Nina.
And we will see you soon.
Yes.
Yes.
And everybody stay safe.
Yes.
Stay safe, everybody. And we'll see you next time on History Dweebs. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.